Welcome back to the Border Patrol. Have a text from Arizona. Dave, our man from Margaritas. By the way, I had a wonderful early dinner at Margaritas on Cinco de Mayo.
Great place.
Me and Susan and the kids. Very delicious. And
Kansas City icon, baby.
Dave just topped your bid. Now it's up to 100.
Wow.
He'll top your bid.
Oh, boy.
He just beat you. He just like what Merrifield just described. He just punched you in the mouth. How do you like it?
It doesn't taste like peaches and roses.
Right. Did you think it was going to be peaches and roses all year?
Did you, Stan?
Stan, if you'd like to bid on the opportunity for you and two friends to play golf with Nate Bucati at Lionsgate and the money benefits ALS Association Mid-America chapter, it's called Golf with a Celebrity. And again, I don't know if you heard me the way it's written. I think it's very, very impressive. It had me excited.
It's package 309.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I wish it was package 69. Whatever. Tell me if this gets you excited. Golf with a Celebrity.
Yes.
This is the opportunity of a lifetime.
Oh, yes.
To play a round of golf with legendary sportscaster and radio host Nate Bucati. You can catch him as the play-by-play announcer for Sporting Kansas City and host of the Border Patrol, and now you can catch him on the golf course. How about that?
And he's practicing.
Right.
He's going to be ready.
He's a real golfer.
I mean, I'm not a good real golfer, but I am practicing.
Right. No, but you're a real golfer.
A couple of lessons.
Right. But you're getting after it.
You're a real golfer.
I'm trying. I'm definitely trying at this point. I never wanted to admit I was trying at golf before, but I am actually trying to be good.
I love the turnaround.
Go to my Twitter, at SSJWHB, at Nate underscore Bucati, at Jake Goody. We tweeted out the link so you could bid on what package number?
309.
But I texted the direct, or the tweeted the direct link right to your office.
Yeah,
tonight.
There's some awesome stuff on there.
What
go
are you
going
to bid
out
on?
Oh, I was looking at date night.
What's that at?
Date night, relax. Kansas City's package includes one free night at the Hotel Kansas City. Enjoy a meal at one of Kansas City's favorite restaurants.
Look at this guy.
With he's Nate Bucati, is that enough?
No,
Nate
Bucati would be very interesting.
I'm not going to any dates. Sorry.
All these unbelievable sports items and everything else, and this guy is still locked in on his lover.
That's right.
Looking for date night. Shaved his beard. What do you think? What do you like?
Well, this
like
guy it? Was on sabbatical for about three right. years, though. So,
what do you think of his face now with no beard?
I think he looks great.
Thanks. He does, doesn't he?
I had the opportunity of a lifetime on, what night was that? Wednesday night.
What's that?
I got to go to Stan's house.
Was it an opportunity of a lifetime for you? Did you enjoy it?
Was this on purpose?
No. He was thinking about
did you
it.
Invite him over, Stan?
Do what?
Did
you
show
invite
up
him over?
I just showed
oh,
up.
Oh, absolutely. I invited him over because Wednesday night's the night that my guys get together and play my board game. We call it SFL. And Andy Harding, who's been a longtime member but doesn't have a team in this league's season, said that he would come over and join Nate. So that made it a lot of fun so that if Andy could come. And Andy, unfortunately, had something pop up and could not come, but the plan was for Andy to come. And I thought it'd be nice for Nate to be able to say hi to Andy and see him in his best environment, probably as a chiropractor or a father or husband's his best environment. But for us, when he's playing SFL, it's a show. It's unbelievable. Unfortunately, he didn't make it, but some of the guys were over there, and so we had Nate coach a little football.
It was fun. It was really fun. That game is incredible.
It is incredible. It's unbelievable.
I'm blown away by the whole thing.
Yes.
I really am. And the way that Stan and his buddies play, they've done it for so long, they're going super fast, and they're throwing all these numbers out there and everything, and it's kind of hard to keep up at first, but once you do, it's really fun. It was cool. And it was an eye-opener to the probabilities that you have to factor into every call that you make through the course of a football game. And I can't believe how much you guys have thought of in terms of what the odds are if you're going to punt here, what the odds are if you're going to decide to return it, bring it out, all those different things, and what could happen and how it could change the course of the game. It was really cool.
Jake wants to know if he could gamble on this game. Is there a way? Do you have point spreads? Is there something we could
do? We definitely could.
Right.
Yeah, but Jake, if we would have said this game has a chance to be close to reality, but you got to understand, one game, like if the Super Bowl were played, even though Jake wouldn't watch it, if it were played 10 times, it wouldn't come out the same every time, Jake. So you can't act like one game is exactly the same. But
no,
for
but
instance, you could treat this game a little bit the same because when I walked in here, I thought about this. the final score of the Super Bowl. Is Jake, is okay for Jake to know what the final score
was? Who knows what's okay for him?
I don't know where the restriction line comes.
Right. Neither
Take
do
your
we.
Headphones off, Nate, if you, Jake, if you don't want to hear this. Final score of the Super Bowl was a surprise as Tampa Bay won 31-9.
Well, I didn't want to hear that
over
again.
In Kansas City. And Nate got a chance to coach the Chiefs against Tampa Bay to reenact the Super Bowl. We had done it 8 times before I came on the Super Bowl, Friday before the Super Bowl. But in Nate's game, there was one kickoff return for a touchdown by the Chiefs. If that would not have occurred, Nate, the final score would have been 30-9.
Dude, so, I'll tell you something. It was eye-opening to play the game out like that.
Did you run the ball?
I tried running the ball.
This is the funniest thing. I brought my stat sheet, okay?
I thought
to
myself,
Super Bowl,
I'm going to be smarter than the Chiefs. I'm going to run the
show
ball.
I'm going to show them. It was really a first-round pick.
I did.
The Chiefs in real life in the real Super Bowl ran the ball 17 times and passed it 49, which would make some people unhappy. Like, why didn't they stick with the running game a little bit more? Well, Nate Bucchetti, when he had a chance to coach the Chiefs in a somewhat similar game where he was behind, he didn't run it 17 times. He ran it 14 times. He didn't throw it 49 times. He threw it 54.
You didn't run it more.
No, I came out of the gate saying, I'm going to run the ball. And the first three series, I ran the ball. And with three and out, all three series, I said, well, I can't do this anymore.
Stick to the game plan, man.
And the only way that I could get to move the ball down the field was by passing it. But then I kept getting sacked. It was like, this is frightening.
Did you trade for Orlando Brown Jr. after the game?
I mean, honestly, I did. And we were talking about it, too. Like, and our defense couldn't stop them. You know, like, it was
couldn't stop the run at the end of the game when they needed to.
Yeah. And when the Bucks knew I was going to throw, they were teeing off on me. I mean, it was just like, this is freaky how close to...
Dick has no idea what you're talking about, by the way.
I know.
We've got Stan Weber in studio. We're going to have Gary Lezak just before 8 o'clock with your forecast. Mike McFarland will talk baseball with us at 8:05. Tim Grunhard will talk about now being a Hall of Famer, a Chiefs Hall of Famer.
Congratulations, Tim Grunhard. Wasn't that awesome?
And then Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports will preview the Canelo Saunders fight with me and hear me rant and rave about the fight on Saturday night down in Dallas. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Golf with Nate Bucchetti getting popular. Dave, our man from Margaritas, texting from Arizona, says $500.
Oh, wow. All right.
In the name of my uncle Richie Ontiveros, because Dave was friends of my uncle's, knew my grandpa very well. Has some stories that were unaware to me before Dave told me, so I appreciate that very much. Dave, a good friend of the family, good friend of the show, good friend of the station.
Dave's first job was for my grandfather at Arts Mexican Products. So how about that?
Small world.
A lot of family ties down in Argentina and KCK.
Armordale?
Yep, Armordale.
Yeah. But
you make me hungry
for
some Eatons right now.
So Dave's pushing the envelope.
Let's
on
go,
this.
Dave. Thank
All
you.
Right? I bet if Dave ends up winning, he'll bring some margaritas with him.
You know what? There. I'll drink some margaritas with you on the golf course.
I was talking about food, but now you want to get hammered. That's
I thought you.
You think it was going to be peaches and roses all year?
No.
I'll eat peaches and roses with you.
Stan Weber, we did not get a chance to talk to you about what the Chiefs did in the second round because you were on Friday, the day of the second round. I'd just like to get your reaction first to the selection of linebacker Nick Bolton out of the University of Missouri. I like that pick very much, Stan.
When I heard Stephen St. John, you talk about Orlando Brown Jr. in a trade, I saw an excitement level that was incredible.
Right.
It was fun, off the charts, all those good things. And then someone said to me yesterday, I wish I would have seen Stephen St. John when he found out that Nick Bolton was picked by the Chiefs. And I go, gosh, I had such a high bar with Orlando Brown Jr. and you predicting a trade and then the Chiefs doing it, taking care of the offensive line. Could Nick Bolton possibly even exceed that? Set a new world record for excitement. So you had to have so much fun.
I'm trying to think.
And what was a trade in the first round and now this pick. So, it's really, I'm more excited for you than even thinking about the Chiefs. They need linebackers.
Wow, thank you.
They need a lot of players. And when you look to the future, they're not just playing the 2021 season. When you're drafting, it's over the next 5 years that these guys are going to be hitting their stride. So I was more excited for you. I know that he's a guy that will hit people. And with the linebackers that the Chiefs have now, he, along with Willie Gay, could be the next generation of guys. And the physicality, I think, is important. You don't see enough of it in the NFL, and they're taking back the times to hit in the National Football League. That basically, in the offseason, they're lessening the requirements for the players, and in in-season, they don't even have enough full practices to cover one per week in the NFL. Do you realize that? That's when they had 16 games. Now they have 17 games and only 15 full padded practices the whole time. So when are you going to learn how to hit? It's got to be natural. And I think you got to pop some people. When it's third and three, you do not let them run the ball for a first down. So I like what Nick Bolton brings. And is he the best pick the Chiefs could have had? You know, I don't know, but I'm happy for you more than anything.
Yeah, I was driving with Phil when he was looking at his phone and he says, Dad, the Chiefs traded for Orlando Brown. And I got mad at him because I thought he was jacking. I go, I said, that's not even funny. I said, don't F with me. And then he goes, no, look. And he showed me. I go, what account? What account is that? He goes, it's an NFL account. And he's like, I go, what? And I pulled the car over, and I'm like trying to verify, because you never know. We've all had those fake accounts, you know, because wait a minute, is that really NFL? And I'm looking, and then I start calling people. Hell, I called you. I had you.
First
on
time
the line.
You ever called me, man. That was
I
great.
Had him. That's the first time I ever called Nate. Woo! In 20 years. He wouldn't answer. You answered. No answer. No callback. I called Timmy. Timmy was on the road. He called me back. You didn't call me back. So then I had to text Jacob. Don't run from this. We're going to talk about this. And we're going to talk about this. You're laughing. What are you giggling for?
We talked about it the morning of the trade.
Yeah, he didn't want
I was
it.
In here with you when you brought it up. We broke it down.
He was running from it. Because he was very dismissive of it. But that's it. That's all right. Get on the bandwagon. Bring it in. This is the best for everybody. It's good for everyone. And then Nick Bolton.
It's good for the show.
It's
really good for the show.
So I'm actually thinking of something.
But Nick Bolton, I screamed. Like, I'm watching in my computer, right? And Phil's kind of right there. And we're going. I go, Nick Bolton and Terrence Marshall. Nick Bolton, it was like, we act so stupid around this stuff. Trust me. I'm an idiot. And so then, right? And then Will Shields goes, Nick, I go, Nick Bolton! I screamed, as loud as possible. And my wife and one of my daughters ran in there because they thought I had fallen down and hurt myself. Because I was just like,
that's you scared how, the dogs, didn't
right.
you?
Right. Oh, the dogs were barking for a half hour after the Chiefs took Nick Bolton. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, please?
Well, you know what? I want to save what I'm going to say till after the top of the hour because it might take me a minute to articulate it, but... Something about what I learned playing Stan's board game that translates to what the Chiefs have done this entire offseason.
Well, you son of a gun.
And it's going to make the... And ironically, Stan's board game is basically all based on numbers, but it's going to make the stat guys... It's going to ruffle their feathers.
Why are you always trying to ruffle the feathers of the analytics crowd when that used to be a crowd
you
championed?
You used to be a part of it.
Well,
turn again.
The pendulum swung too far.
There we go.
He was with them when they started bringing the pendulum back to where it should be.
We need to come back
and
to center.
It swung too far one direction, and now it's gone too far the other.
All right.
Just call him Marty, because when he had a chance to coach the Marty Schottenheimer Chiefs, he was not losing. He was perfect.
Marty,
so I'm going to start calling him Marty now.
We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Katera. Stan Weber's in studio. What about Creed Humphrey? That's a guy you watched play when he was at Oklahoma. Todd Lebo was thrilled. I'm thrilled. I told you, whenever the Chiefs invest in the offensive line, forevermore, I will give a double thumbs up and be happy with it, because protect Patrick Mahomes is goal number one now at Arrowhead Drive. And so, what did you think of that draft pick?
Oh, that was very solid. Again, I overvalue centers. I probably shouldn't. We don't huddle as much as we used to, but they still in the NFL do. And you're not underneath center as much. You don't have that connectivity. But I still think that centers set the tone. And if you can get a very good one, they're the kind of guy who can upgrade the whole offensive line and make them play slightly better. And this is a game of inches in the National Football League. The difference between a 12-4 team and a 9-7 team really isn't that much different often. And every little bit of difference you can make, he plays with a physical style. at Oklahoma, when you go back three seasons ago, they had all kinds of NFL players on the line, and they were pounding people. And they were playing through the whistle, as they say. I mean, they were intimidating at foes, and Creed was right there with them, you know, as a longtime starter. So very solid pick, I thought, for the Chiefs. And they've done so much on the offensive line. They've got so many options, so much depth. They've taken care of things for now, the 2021 season, and they also have put things in place for the future. So it's something very good if you mix a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes with an offensive line that you can believe in, and you're not going to have injuries affect it too much because you have so many different options. You're not counting. You know, like Long comes out of retirement. He's got a big name. So you want to feel good about him. But what happens if he's rusty and just not able to play to the high level? You're not counting on him to say, we plugged him in and he has to start. LTD, you know, how focused is he going to be on football? What is his level of play going to be? Don't know, but you don't have to have any one of those guys step up and play down after down. It's whoever's hot, whoever's ready, whoever's healthy. So I think the Chiefs have done a great job of being in a perfect position for the 2021 season and also addressing things to the future, even if Orlando Brown Jr. turns out to be, you know, like Jeff Chedia says, you know, someone they don't want to sign. I don't like putting words in other people's mouths, but I think
no,
if you
No, go ahead. Please do.
Sorry, Jeff. I don't like doing that, so I apologize. You tell me what Jeff said. Is it possible they don't sign him to a new contract?
His what was
Some
his
people say. How
prediction?
About that?
He'll be below average, and they won't sign him to a long-term deal. Yeah. Nick Leckie did a deep study film dive and came away saying that he thinks Orlando Brown Jr. could be an all-pro this year. So there's that doesn't span the entire
range of predictions. That fits with what I'm saying is I'm not predicting where we're going to be on that range, but I'm saying when you're the Chiefs and you're running an organization, you've got to be ready for all those possibilities. You don't have to with a salary cap, decisions you've got to make, but right now they have not signed him to an extension. They can see how he plays and see how the rest of the offensive line works. But even if they don't sign him to a long-term extension, if that's not part of the ultimate plan, if he doesn't play to the level that they want or gets injured or something like that, I'm telling you, they've done so much to get the offensive line upgraded. It's a big step forward. It's the feature thing of the offseason. It's what they have done the best is take care of the offensive line.
So that was the kind of awakening I just had a little bit ago, thinking about this in context of the game that I played at Stan's house. We've kind of focused on it that way. Like, look, they went out and their number one job was to rebuild the offensive line, and I think that's true. But I think there's also kind of another lens we can look at this through, which is, and I'll quote Jeff Chedid on this. He has criticized the Chiefs on this front for a while now, and we all kind of laughed at him because the Chiefs went out and won the Super Bowl anyway, and got to another Super Bowl this past year. But he's, you know, his quote is, at the end of the day, football is still a game about lining up and kicking the other guy's ass. And the Chiefs have not really been that physical team that, and that's what he said that they're missing. They've been missing a little bit of that physicality, and that is obviously one of the things that really kicked their ass in the Super Bowl. And when I played that game at Stan's, it was like, it was so eye-opening to see like how demoralizing, even when you're playing it on a board game, it is when it's third and medium and the other team runs for a first down on you and then does it again. And how demoralizing it is when it's third and medium on your side and you know you cannot run it for a first down on them. And how much it changes the way you have to call the game. It changes just the way you feel about the game, too. Because after a while, you're like, man, we can't stop these guys. And on the other side, it's like, man, if we don't throw for big plays, we're in trouble here. And I just wonder, so you take that offensive line, and not just the fact that they rebuilt it, but look at the guys that they did it with. Tooney is considered a guy that can smash people and help in the run game. You know, Orlando Brown Jr. is considered a guy with a nasty streak that finishes that plays to the echo.
Came from a running style. You know he goes out and blocks people.
Yeah, plays to the echo of the whistle the way that that Herm Edwards said. And then you look at Creed Humphrey, and they talk about, like, I'm looking at his breakdown on NFL.com. Quote, he plays with a nasty streak when needed. And then, Stephen, your favorite quote about Nick Bolton that you heard during the entire lead-up to the draft. What was it that Dane Brugler said about
him? He's a hammer looking for a nail, Stan.
And you look at Jerron Reed they got an interior defensive lineman, not another pass rusher that we thought was going to be the bigger priority. And I know he can rush the passer from the inside, but it looks to me like it wasn't just the offensive line. It looks to me like the Chiefs decided, you know what, we need to be able to actually line up and kick somebody's ass, which we've outskilled everybody and beaten them with the speed and the amazing quarterback we have, but we also need the ability to stop people from kicking our ass and to kick a little ass sometimes too when we play. And maybe that was a more overarching approach to the offseason.
And when you have a great quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, a lot of people want to say throw every down, which is fine. He'll be successful if he threw every down. If you just had no backs in the backfield, five wide, he'll be fine, and he'll be successful. But I'm telling you, he'll be even more successful if they think the run might be coming.
Yes.
The coordinators are going to have to call different defenses. Guys are going to be more wide open. And look at his contract. We want him to be great for 15 years. We do not want him to take hits right after he's thrown a beautiful ball out of a five-wide set with edge blitzers coming off. He picks up the blitz by getting rid of the ball.
Yeah.
But how about if you run the ball and you took Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Now, a lot of people will say that's the dumbest thing ever. Don't take a running back in the first round. But they did. And he did fine as a rookie. But he could be even better if the offensive line came off the ball and blocked people.
Yeah.
And what happens if he just, you know, mark him down for 1,100 yards? And then another back for 350 yards. And you start saying, well, that's not taking the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. That's what a lot of analytic people say. You just took the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. It's not true. If you can run the ball effectively, you've protected him physically. He becomes more lethal when he wants to throw. And he still, if they get behind by 10 because everything goes wrong, could say, let's forget the running game and throw. So it elongates his career. Yeah. Not his career in number of years played, but his effectiveness when he's playing down the line. And look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not the same as he was, but look at his effectiveness. He has not gotten beat up throughout his career. They didn't go five wide in New England and say, hey, you can do this, Tom. Take a few hits. Let's go win games. He's still not beaten up from football because they've always had some balance in their offense. And Stan, the Chiefs have that ability to do it now.
And so, like, moving forward, Stan, they've changed the personnel, and like Nate's pointed out, they've invested in, it looks like, becoming a more physical, tougher football team. Do you think they'll change the approach on offense at all? Do you think we'll see the way the Super Bowl changed our thinking, right? And it changed the way we view this team, because we had never seen this team get blown out. We had never seen Patrick Mahomes running for his life like that, really. I mean, there have been games, but nothing like that. We'd never seen this team only score in single digits. Considering the investment in the offensive line, the desire to keep Patrick Mahomes healthy, do you think they'll run the ball more? Do you think they'll change things up a bit? Or will it be the same? And there's nothing wrong with it being the same either.
It's going to be hard to move off of being the same. Okay, here's why. We can talk about it, and we can intellectually say the Chiefs have set this up. Brett Veach is, for instance, given the opportunity for the football team to play that way. But I'm telling you, Andy Reid plays off of his instincts. He's a human being who's excellent at what he does and what he has always done. Before the NFL did it, he set the tone and threw the ball more than he ran. And he didn't have Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes when he was doing it. He was doing it back in Philadelphia and saying, why wouldn't we pass? I love the pass. And in our changeup, that's our fastball, our changeup is let's run the ball. And we'll dictate when we want to run. We'll trick him when we want to run. But I love to pass. That DNA is what the NFL does now. And it's his way of doing things. And he has Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce is such a safety blanket. On any play, Patrick can get the ball to him. He can be guarded. And they just throw the ball away from him. And he reaches out and makes the catch. You got Tyreek Hill. So it's not going to be easy for Andy Reid to go, thanks, Brett Veach, for setting up the physicality the way you have and drafting Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We're going to now balance up the offense. I just think it's going to be hard for him. But they've given themselves the option. And what I like about it is he may not do it very much, but when you try to win a Super Bowl, you have to have the variability to play against different styles. In Tampa's style, you know, like when Nate played the game the other night, it's not so much what's wrong with the Chiefs, and people are not giving enough credit to Tampa Bay. It's how Tampa Bay plays ball and how it matched up with the Chiefs, how having Tom Brady match up with the Chiefs that kept them from winning the Super Bowl. It's not generically, oh, they don't protect the quarterback enough, or the offensive line was hurt. Yes, that was true. They didn't play their best game, but Tampa had something to do with it. So having the ability to play with different styles, I think, will be utilized. But if we're halfway through the season next year, Stephen, don't know what you're going to call the halfway. You're going to call it at the eighth game mark or the ninth?
Halftime of the ninth game.
Well, there's a ninth game. It's halftime of the ninth game. Call me for the second time ever. Call me, and we'll say, you know, but I think you might look, and the stats people will say, oh, the Chiefs are throwing the ball just as much as they did before. But just being more effective when you run. And I think that will allow Andy, you know, if he gets 7 yards on a run instead of four, he might actually come back to it a little bit more. But he doesn't need to, I don't sit here and say, oh, Andy Reid, you need to coach with a different style just because of the Super Bowl or anything else. But I love the option that they have with the physicality of their offensive line and protecting Patrick Mahomes. It all goes hand in hand.
Okay, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. Because I don't want them to change their philosophy. Because this is a team, like most teams you would think, boy, they just drafted a running back in the first round last year, and they've invested in all these offensive linemen to kind of try to change their personality. Now they're going to be even more committed to running the ball. I don't want that. I want him to throw the ball a million times, especially now that he's going to have protection. But within certain games, like the game against Buffalo last year, where clearly what was Buffalo's run the ball against us. We're not letting you beat us over the top. We're not going to let you, you know, to kill us with the big strikes. You have to kill us with a million paper cuts. And they did. And so they had the ability to do that. Then after that, the offensive line became decimated by injury. In the Super Bowl, that possibility was there. And they didn't do it. And who knows? Maybe they didn't trust their offensive line to run the ball. They couldn't pass. Like, whatever.
But okay? Just think if you can take the edge off that pass. Let's go back to the Super Bowl. Without an offensive line that you're happy with, obviously, number one issue.
Yes.
But Tampa brings the heat. They've got guys. They stop the run very well if they are playing against the run. But against the Chiefs, they're playing against a pass, rushing the passer. Go back and watch the highlights of the 17 runs the Chiefs had. They got some gaps. They hurt them. But if they could have done that a little bit more, then those edge rushers would not be going to the quarterback quite as quick. And, oh, by the way, they get tired out. Those dudes that have those sack totals and the big contracts, they don't like getting hit and having to fight through guys and try to stop the run. It just takes a little bit of the edge off. Grunhardt talks about all the time that those defensive linemen are the one group in the NFL that don't necessarily play super hard on every play. And they're less likely to fire and make that great pass rush that Tim Grunhardt talks about if they have to stop the run a little bit more. Not because of strategy and, oh, I can't go upfield quite as quick. Most of those guys have those big contracts. They don't care. You know, let's go kill the quarterback. But they don't even have to. They don't like fighting through a double team or someone a tight end coming across and hitting them. And it just like, come on, man, 7 yards, and everyone's yelling, come on, stop the run. And they're. It's psychological. When you run the ball, you beat the hell out of someone. You distract them from rushing the quarterback. All those things come together. You don't have to run the ball a ton, but you got to run the ball effectively and have enough balance in your offense that changes the whole mindset of that group. And mostly, like Nate would talk about, the defensive coordinator. So he doesn't call crap that puts pressure, because the defensive coordinator is going to try to bring the heat. If it's a safety blitz, corner blitz, linebacker fire, they're going to do whatever they can to disrupt Patrick Mahomes. And if he's sitting there going, if I do that and Clyde Edwards-Helaire runs that trap play, they're going to run for 40 yards. I can't do that. Suddenly, he's not hurting you with the blitz. So I don't think Andy Reid's going to change. I don't think you have to be worried at all. Andy Reid's convicted that the Chiefs are a super team the way they do it, but he has a little safety net now. Calm the game down. Against Tampa Bay, if we played the first quarter over and now it's second quarter and things aren't going well, he could calm the game down and run a little bit more.
And see, that's what I like, because one of the things that impressed me over the years about New England was they could get in a shootout with you and they could beat you. They can get into a knockdown, drag-out defensive battle and they could beat you. They could mold to whatever they need to do within a game to win that game.
And that's, I think, perfectly said. That's what I was trying to say. The Chiefs are the super team of the NFL right now.
Right.
They aren't New England for 10 years, but for the 2 years they've had and coming up next year, they are like New England. They've got to have variability to beat everybody, Steve.
Right. And I think that offensive line could, like Nate said, be more physical. And give the Chiefs, if they have to lean on the running game, whatever.
How about Tooney walking over? Just think about it. This is a New England Patriot. He knows exactly what you said. He's got supreme confidence. I believe he has respect for the coaching staff. But how about if he walks off midway through the second quarter after a punt and says to Patrick Mahomes, hey, tell those guys run the effing ball behind us. Or goes over to coach and say, hey, coach, we'll block him up. Let's run it a couple times. Don't you think that might, with total respect, don't you think this coaching staff would say, you know what, I like the pass, I like putting it more on Patrick, but everyone's on board. Let's let that dude set the tone and go beat someone up a couple of plays. Maybe that's all it's it. But I think he alone might speak up with complete respect and say, he remembers. He remembers that New England didn't just play one style. They changed it. And when the Chiefs were the better team in Arrowhead and the Chiefs didn't go to the Super Bowl against New England, what do? Run, run, run. Why did they do that? Because they had the variability to do it, and the Chiefs can't stop the run back then.
In between Orlando Brown and Creed Humphrey and, like you said, Joe Tooney, and that attitude and that toughness, and on the other
side
of the ball.
Can you imagine saying, let's run the ball over the left side with that group who's been coming off the ball, blocking the run game?
And I think Jaron Reed is a beast. I think he's going to add a lot to the defensive line. I think that's a super underrated move that the Chiefs made. A guy that they didn't anticipate was going to be available. They had the money to go out and get him, and I think he is going to be a huge addition, like what Nate said. And then, again, we'll go back to this. People think I just like to talk about him because he went to Missouri. That helps. But Nick Bolton is exactly the kind of linebacker with the attitude and that the leadership, the whole ball of wax that they have needed at linebacker, he fills in all the blanks.
For instance, if he, you may not be happy with this, but I look at him as a player that I don't count on to plug and play, even though he's a high draft choice to go, you know, be a starter for the Chiefs and dominate. He doesn't have to do that. But what happens when it's second and goal from the 3-yard line and you got to make sure they aren't going to run the ball in? That's where you say, Nick Bolton, go in there. That's where Gay is not in the game. Okay, he's at midfield and you want to cover the pass, but you need someone to pop someone at the goal line. So you may take out Hitchens or match him up with Hitchens, and suddenly just a tackle to stop him from scoring a touchdown. How valuable is that? And then he gains his confidence. So even if he doesn't play down after down and Nick Bolton comes on over time, already I have him being my starting linebacker for goal line situations. You know, tight red zone, when you get down to that 5-yard line, get Bolton in there and go pop some people. Because very few players in the National Football League tackle with through a player and knock him backwards. Go through your mind's eye. Think about your red zone, watching the red zone. How often do backs and receivers fall down falling forward?
Oh yeah,
almost always. Now go watch some tape of the old days and see how
Steve
often,
Atwater actually knocking Christian Okoye
they're
back,
knocking him backwards.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And Nick Bolton is one of those guys that can do that.
So, you know, I was, it's funny, I got a text message from Boddicker last night because the I don't know if you guys saw the play from the Yankees where I can't remember who it was, but he scored from first base on a ground ball to shortstop because the shift was on, and the catcher went to cover third base, and the pitcher forgot to go cover home, and so he just literally ran all the way around the bases. And Boddicker's like, still like the shift, which I'm not a big fan of the shift, but I am completely against outlawing it, which is what a lot of coaches in Major League Baseball have wanted to do. And my point is, get better at baseball. If they're going to give you the entire half of the field to hit to, hit it over there. You know, George Brett would hit over 400 against the shift easy. And the problem that the Chiefs had after that Bills game that you referenced, Stephen, was other teams were giving them 7 yards in the running game and they couldn't take it. Their offensive line wasn't good enough to take the 7 yards that were being given to them. And that doesn't mean that, like, yeah, you just abandon the pass game. You know, you still don't get away from your DNA as to who you are as a team. But when the other team wants to give you 5, 6, 7 yards, and you don't even have to put your quarterback at risk or any of that stuff, you need to be able to take it. You know, and that's part of, I think, where the Chiefs, I think that's where Andy Reid looked at it this year and said that. Like, you know, with Tooney at guard and Orlando Brown Jr., if the other team's going to say, yeah, we're going to play a dime defense against you, the Chiefs are going to be, and because statistically they showed it last year when the Chiefs were facing those, you know, those pass-heavy defenses.
Light boxes,
yeah. And they still couldn't run the ball effectively. And that just makes you're just so much easier to defend.
And how about being a better goal line offense, too, because we run side to side. I mean, it's
everything was
Hardeman running around the edge or
jet
shovel pass or, you know, all those kind of plays. How about just going over the left side where you got these new offensive linemen who are good in a blocking game in the run and just blowing some people off the ball and going scoring. But can we, hey, Jake, you do things so well around here and you multitask and you control cameras. Can you turn the video on, please? Because Stephen St. John acted like he's a producer. Like, I started talking about something, and a great producer just pops up the video, making me look like I know what I'm talking about. Right, Stephen?
Right.
Can you just show that video now, or can you describe that video?
This is a video of a goal line play.
Nate's a play-by-play guy. They said a famous play-by-play guy.
This is a goal line
Tennessee
play.
Tennessee Volunteers line up at fourth down from the two-yard line.
And there's Nick Bolton, see?
Quarterback shouting instructions, drops back into the shotgun.
Look, Jake.
Takes the snap, darting to his right, and he is met at the goal line and driven back by Nick Bolton.
There we go.
Who came shooting through the gap. What a goal line stand for the Missouri Tigers.
Do you think do you agree with me that he could be our starting?
Looking for a nail.
Could you, you agree with him being a starting linebacker in the goal line defense? Are you ready for that?
The funny part is that's exactly the kind of play that you were just talking about. Lowers his shoulder, drives a guy back 3 yards.
You hardly ever see that in college football, and now even in the pros.
We know we can do it.
That guy was running full speed from the 10, thought he was going to go across the goal line, and ended up going backwards. Mm-hmm. Not many dudes hit like that. And you can't teach it anymore because they don't let you practice tackling. College football is talking about having less than one-third of their practices here in this fall in August have full pads. That's college football. It's up. The NCAA is talking about it right now, and they're only going to allow 8 or 9 out of 27 practices to be full pads. They want them to tackle each other less. And I'm good for safety. I'm good for that. But you can't teach the guys to tackle like that anymore and work their way through it. It's got to be natural, and it's natural for Nick Bolton.
We've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jake, is it okay if I mention something very delicious?
Please.
Oh, right. Wow.
Please. Please, would you?
Maybe. You know that there's a Herford House right by my house, and I like to go there a lot.
There's a Herford House right down the street from here. I like to frequent.
It's delicious.
Did you realize it's been a Kansas City tradition since 1957?
It's been a Mike Bucati tradition for a long time.
Herford House. Yeah, my grandpa used to wear a tie.
Wow.
When we go to Herford House. Clip on, but still. Herford House has served generations for birthdays, anniversaries, and Mother's Day. Let Herford House help you treat the moms in your life to a perfect meal, and their dessert is on the house. Moms get to choose from their famous homemade carrot cake, which I'm a big fan of carrot
cake. Phenomenal.
And so I love the carrot cake, or the chocolate tower cake, or the chef's seasonal cheesecake. It's all good, but the carrot cake is divine. Thank you. Reservations for Mother's Day weekend are filling quickly at all Herford House locations. Leawood, Independence, Shawnee, and Zona Rosa. Reservations are limited, so call or visit herfordhouse.com to make your reservation today. And an unbelievable steak soup, which must be ordered every time I visit there. Thank you. We have Stan Weber in studio, and we've been talking about the Chiefs and what Stan thought of the moves that they made in the draft. Here's something else that I wanted to run past you guys, because he is this. Not a whole lot has been said, or I haven't sensed a whole lot of excitement about this draft pick, but maybe this will add to it. I'm reading an article from ESPN Plus, Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus, and he was asked to name 10 undervalued day 3 picks who will make an impact. So his day 3 draft steals. Jake, are you interested in this?
I am always.
Who's he gonna? Who am I gonna say? There's a Chief on here. Who is it?
The wide receiver from Clemson.
You read the article?
No,
that's
I didn't.
Not fun.
I
Cornell
didn't.
Powell.
If you're gonna cheat, then I don't want to do this. We won't do this anymore.
Cornell Powell.
The correct answer is Cornell Powell. Because everyone's been saying,
"Well, I'm
the
gonna,
lineman
I'm gonna be
from
honest,
Tennessee."
Your build up kind of.
Thank you.
Your build up to it kind of is like, which guy hasn't really been talked about a whole lot?
Let me offer this to Stan and see if this.
Because my answer, if you just straight up like, who's the Trey Smith would be
right.
My answer.
Well, because everyone says talking that he should have been a second round pick.
Right.
Or Cole Kubelik, or how do you say his last name? Kubelik. Cactostone?
John Cactostone.
There was Petro played it. He had a clip that he said that the Chiefs stole the draft, and they got a guy that has their first-round tape out there when you watch this kid, and they got him in the sixth round. So, but here's what Mike Renner said. Cornell Powell, Stan, pick 181 in round number 5. This is what he write. You guys tell me if you agree or you say no way. The number 2 receiver position in Kansas City is up in the air at this point. While Byron Pringle and DeMarcus Robinson have each had their opportunities over the years, neither has solidified himself as a legitimate option. There's a chance Powell can step in and be that guy. Powell is one of the most physical route runners in the draft class at 6 foot and 204 pounds, and he broke out in a big way down the stretch in 2020. Over the final 6 games of Powell's collegiate career, he averaged well over 100 yards per contest, and his 730 receiving yards were the 6th most in college football over that span. He then went to the Senior Bowl and had the 2nd highest win rate of any receiver in the one-on-ones against press coverage. The skill set can translate quickly. Stan Weber.
It's no dead cinch when you're a 5th-round choice, but, you know, again, he was doing this at Clemson. You go back and look at his career. Why didn't he start more? Why wasn't he a bigger factor until that latter half of the season in 2020? Well, when you're at Clemson, you could be a superstar and be second team. So you got to wait your time. And so, you know, I don't know how good he's going to be. There's the potential there. He's played against big-time competition in practice. He's going against one of the best defensive groups that has a variety of defenses, NFL-like.
And that means something.
It does, because the recognition of what comes, it's a very clear picture when teams run simple defenses. It gets so muddled in the NFL where you think the corner's over you and you know what the coverage is and you see the safety to the inside. And you either think he's coming up and playing the flat or you think he's playing cover 2 and he's back on the hash. And then when the ball snapped, you see him dart and run someplace else. It just messes with your mind because for, what, 2 or 3 seconds, you're in your own little world as a wide receiver. You're running out there, and the quarterback's going to stick the ball on you, and that ball comes in so hard, so fast. It's crazy, but those few seconds, you need to be calm, like know what's going on and feel comfortable, because even when you are, when you turn and the ball's on you, even if you're a pro, it's not the easiest thing to snatch that thing as you're about ready to get hit. The more you can mess with a player's mind and either have them not used to the talent that's right there in front of them. Like, how do they get off man-to-man coverage? Well, at Clemson, Brent Venables, my buddy from K-State, and know him well, he runs an exotic defense. He has great players. They're going to do different things. So you're not going to be surprised by the physicality, but you're also not going to be surprised when someone darts and you think you got a slant route that's going to be wide open, and then here comes a defensive end dropping back into that coverage. You're like, oh, what the heck? You got to keep your concentration level, and you can only do that with repetition. You need to be an experienced player, and at Clemson, they run exotic defenses. Guys move from spot to spot. They have man on one side, zone on the other. It emulates a lot of what you're going to see in the NFL, and I think all you got to do is just play to your ability, and it's hard for these kids to not get sped up. It's hard for them to not think, oh my gosh, this is the pros. But to be successful, look at Byron Pringle. Look at Byron Pringle. People now want to start cutting him down, saying, well, I don't know if he's good enough to really be that important to our offense. Well, let's forget that for a second. Let's look at what we expected him to be and how far he's come. And you know why? Because he simplifies the game and just says, I'm going to play with the passion, I'm going to believe in myself, and I'm just going to execute what I can do. And he doesn't try to make it too hard. And guess what? You see him making big catches in games. He didn't leave the line of scrimmage going, oh, I'm going to really kill him on this play. He's like, I can run this route. I'm not going to get distracted. If Patrick throws me the ball, I'm going to just try to catch it. And once he catches it, he's going to try to run with it. If they want him to do special, you see what I'm saying? Having the experience of playing against high-level competition and exotic defenses that you're going to see in the NFL and not being distracted by it, I haven't played a lot of wide receiver, but I've done it some. In those 2 or 3 seconds that you come off the ball, it's – you've got to be comfortable and calm to be ready for what's about to happen. Because when that quarterback throws the ball, guess what, guys? It's like a magnet. For some reason, everybody changes their attention, and that ball's spinning through hands. Guys are flying to your body, and it's hard enough just to make the catch. If you're not in really good shape after a couple seconds and knowing what you're doing, how you're doing it, believing in yourself, you're going to, oh, the ball comes off your hands. I don't know if does that make sense. If you know what you're doing and you're confident and you're not distracted, you still aren't going to have the easiest catch in the world. But when you get a little mixed up for those 2 seconds that you should be calm, and now you turn around, the world just keeps spinning, the ball comes ripping through, bounces off your hands, and guess what? Every receiver says, oh, I'll get it next time. And I tell you, football is the greatest game because I've walked back to the huddle with so many people that during those 4 seconds of the play, they screwed up and weren't good enough to play, and they came back to the huddle all cocky, like, I'll get it next time. And then you finally realize, no, you'll never get it because we only get a play for 4 or 5 seconds, and the players who can do it, and the ones who talk can't. So that's quite the tangent right there, but I think where he played, what he's shown will give him the best chance. Is it going to be easy? No. It's not going to be easy to be a factor in the NFL. To be a second-best receiver or third-best receiver for the Chiefs is going to be a hard job, no matter what we think about what he's done. But he's been trained well. He's shown some things in those games. If you go watch the tape, I'm happy with him, and hope he steps in and does some things. Because I think Byron Pringle will play his role. Can't count on him all season long to be dominant, but he'll have his times where he's hot, have 5 catches in a game, and it might make the difference winning a game.
I like the fact that you quoted some of his production. Because I feel like some of the draft picks the Chiefs have made at the wide receiver position, I'm thinking specifically of Chris Conley and Mecole Hardman, have been more about measurables.
They're fast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's tall. He's fast. The measurable stuff. And I believe much more in the tape and the production. And that goes back to what I used to always say about Tyler Lockett. Now, he measured fast in the 40, by the way, but they didn't like his measurables. He's always open. And he's producing because he knows how to get open. And that is, I think, by the way, I told you, I think that a lot of this combine measurable stuff is going to become less and less and less important, especially as they start using more GPS tracking stuff on these players. And pretty soon in college football, by the way, it's going to be just like you see all those goofy soccer players wearing their sports bras out there with those little trackers.
What?
They are all, every Division I team is going to have these at some point. And they're going to have all that data. And they're going to know how fast the guy comes out of his break in live pads against an opponent.
When it matters. That's awesome.
And they're going to know all that stuff. They're not going to care how fast the guy runs a 40 or does the shuttle drill. They're going to watch it, but they're not going to really care because they're going to know how fast the guy plays against an opponent in pads in a game scenario. But the production matters. You know, and there's... You can run the 40 in a super fast time, but if you didn't catch any balls in college, then, you know, is it going to translate? And sometimes you can say, well, maybe he didn't have a good quarterback. But you know what? Those guys were at Georgia. and this guy, like, he's producing. If he's producing
at quarterbacks at Georgia, good enough that Justin Fields transferred out of Georgia.
Right.
To go to Ohio State.
Right, right. So, like, to me, if he's producing at Clemson, That makes me a little more optimistic that he's going to then take it to the next level and actually produce, because that's what the game's about.
Down the stretch, he had against Notre Dame, he had 6 catches for 161 yards and a touchdown. Against Pitt, 6 for 176 and a touchdown. And they played Notre Dame again, 4 for 59. Vitek, 4 for 90 with a touchdown. Against Ohio State, 8 for 139 and 2 touchdowns.
See, now you like that because he's probably playing against some NFL caliber corners when he puts up numbers against Ohio State.
And against pressure situations. Just look at that lineup of teams that he played against. Just getting used to playing in big games, because every game in the NFL is going to seem like the biggest deal. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable when you walk across and look at those uniforms of the teams you've seen play your whole life and played fantasy football with, and now you're going against them. Look at that lineup of teams you just mentioned.
Right.
I mean, what, Virginia Tech was the worst of the group that you just mentioned.
And that's when he got hot in week 9, because BC, 105 yards. Notre Dame, 161. Pitt, 176. Vitek, 90. Notre Dame, 59. But then Ohio State, 139. And he scored touchdowns from week 7 on every game except 2. So touchdown, touchdown, then touchdown, 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 no touchdown, then 2 touchdowns. So had touchdowns in, wow, 5, 6 different games there.
It's hard to get excited for preseason games other than you just want football to get going, and maybe the Chiefs will go back to St. Joe and that whole routine that everyone gears up and the fans love. But there are 3 preseason games instead of 4, but this is the kind of player I want to see play some in the preseason. Just to see what he looks like with a Chiefs uniform on and what he does. And even though the preseason doesn't matter and Patrick Mahomes may not even take a snap during those 3 games, I'm still interested to see what he can do.
During that stretch, he became only the 3rd Clemson wide receiver to have 3 consecutive 100-yard games, joining Sammy Watkins and DeAndre Hopkins. So
those are decent. Wow. That's decent company. It's decent company.
If he can keep his name in a sentence with them,
right,
as a chief,
and I like
that would be big time.
And I know people were upset. I mean, hell, I would have been thrilled if they would have got a wide receiver in the second round.
Yeah.
But they did add two pass catchers in the tight end and moved up to get him, and then Powell and the Yab into the mix. And the one thing I didn't like about what he wrote about Powell, I wouldn't lump Pringle in with DeMarcus Robinson as guys that, hey, they've had their chance and they really haven't capitalized. Yeah. DeMarcus Robinson has had more of a chance than Pringle.
Yeah.
I think this is a big year for Pringle. This is his chance. I feel like DeMarcus Robinson, and there's nothing wrong with DeMarcus Robinson. He can play all the positions. He's good quality depth. He knows the offense. But he's had more of an opportunity to prove himself. And I think Pringle, this year, he could have a real opportunity to go out and show that he could be a productive receiver. And so that's the one thing I disagree with.
They should be same with Cole Hardman. I mean,
he's had yes.
Do not, this is one of the things I really believe in business and everything. Do not promote people into an expectation area where they suddenly become a failure. Byron Pringle, hey, my son's good friends with Byron Pringle. I broadcast his games. I have only great things to say about him. But I don't count on Byron Pringle being the second best receiver for the Chiefs at all. That's too much to ask. He should be an awesome third best receiver or fourth best receiver. Do not try to create a situation where he becomes a disappointment. He's not a disappointment. He's a good pro. He's awesome on special teams. He catches the ball when given a chance. But don't put Scottie Pippen in Michael Jordan's shoes and then say, you know, it's your time.
How come you're not Michael Jordan?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's Mecole Hardman needs to step up or someone else. If Byron Pringle does it, he's going to have us saying, well, the Chiefs aren't good enough at the second best receiver slot to be as good as they should be, and then bash him. No, he should not have to play that role. He should be, when there's three wides out there, four wides, bring on Byron Pringle. He won't make mistakes. He'll make plays. But to make him go from there to, in a basketball analogy, to go doing a lot of things and taking his points and scoring five a game and getting five rebounds and then saying, we need 13 points from you, that's so unfair.
Is it possible that, to use the basketball analogy a little bit further, you know, in today's NBA they talk about positionless basketball where there isn't option 1 through 5 the way there used to be. It's whoever's open is the guy.
And Patrick does that.
Is it possible that between Hardman, Robinson, Pringle, Powell, there isn't a second best receiver. There's four other guys that whichever one's open becomes the second best receiver. Is it possible that it becomes that way for them?
I think it will be for the Chiefs because I don't expect any of these guys to step up and be what Sammy Watkins was in a Super Bowl winning run in 2019. Sammy Watkins is a dominant type player in the National Football League, and the Chiefs saw him at the end of his career. I thought he's very humble. Unfortunately, he got injured a lot. But when he was available, he did not get upset that Tyreek Hill was the big dog and Travis Kelce was a much bigger factor. He could have been a baby about it. Mm-hmm. And he took that $14 million contract. I have a lot of good things to say about him. But he can play at a higher level than any of the rest of the Chiefs receivers will play at this year. I don't count on those guys at all playing to Sammy Watkins' Super Bowl game against the Niners level. He's not that big a threat. They're going to have to just scheme him open and play it off of the fact that there's going to be double teams against Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce on almost every play of the game. Mm-hmm. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire will also be catching the ball out of the backfield. But what's great about Patrick Mahomes and the way Andy Reid has taught him and the way that the Chiefs run things, he throws to the guys who's open. And usually he throws it so accurately that they don't have to dive to make a catch. They don't have to be superstars. DeMarcus can just go, boom, hit me in the number. Byron Pringle,
and then run
stay
forward.
Alive. And then
don't run backwards.
That's all. Oh, gosh. That's always right. Run forward.
Small gripe.
Always, right. Steven. Always run forward.
That's what I tell Jake. Keep moving forward. Like Canelo tells me, keep going. Stan, before we run out of time, you've been hot on your predictions, and so I will ask you the same question that I asked Jeff Chedia and these two guys here to make your prediction. Here are your three options. Will Aaron Rodgers next season be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, be the quarterback of a different NFL team, or be retired?
I'll go different team.
Ooh.
I think he's a hard-headed guy who will not go back to the Packers. He has enough money and enough conviction that once it goes public, it becomes a war, and he's going to win that war and say, I'm not going to go back to Green Bay. So I think he's out of the Packers. And I think Green Bay is so close to being a Super Bowl level team. 13-3 last year, had a home game against Tampa, could have won the game if some things would have gone their way and they played more solidly. They're close enough that they need to substitute something back in. Like I said, my perfect trade is go to Seattle and say, we'll take Russell Wilson, you get Aaron Rodgers. And say, Green Bay, let's go. But they've got to find a replacement quarterback who can at least get them the hope. And I know, for instance, everyone says around here with very simple statement, oh, Alex Smith would have never taken us to the Super Bowl. Okay, right. Fine. But if Alex Smith were healthy and he went to Green Bay with as good as they are, he would have them right on the verge of getting to the Super Bowl. They need something like that. You can't go from 13-3. Is it 2 years in a row that they were 13-3? But last year they were 13-3. You can't go from that and lose Aaron Rodgers and only get future draft choices and end up being a 9-8 team this year. You can't do that. They've got to have a legitimate quarterback involved in a trade or free agency or something. And because of that, I think that they'll have to make a move. I don't think they'll sit there and dare Aaron Rodgers to sit out. Because if Aaron does it and sits out for 1 year and comes back the next year, Green Bay's the one that gets punched in the mouth. They need to do something and get value from Aaron right now. So I think Rodgers playing for another team, hopefully not the Denver Broncos.
Stan Weber, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
That is Stan Weber. Up next, we'll talk to Gary Lezak and then Mike McFarland on the Royals on Sports Radio 810 WHB.